Your vote really, really, really counts. A lot.
What would you know about it, Al Gore?
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair.
Only a little scared.
And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yep.
Yes, I'm stuck in the middle.
From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM, people-powered radio in Los Angeles, and Radio Sputnik, blanketing planet Earth 5 days a week. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow. Says me from bradblog.com. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up, a federal judge in Florida has now extended the voter registration deadline in the Sunshine State by just one day, at least for now. At the moment, a hearing is coming up on Wednesday on the Democratic Party's lawsuit seeking to extend voter registration in that key swing state after Hurricane Matthew swept through last week, knocking out what was to have been the big final weekend for voter registration drives, the big important final weekend for voter registration drives amidst a very important election in this country, to say the least. After a federal judge found Republican Governor Rick Scott's reason for refusing to extend the voter registration deadline in the wake of the that hurricane and Rick Scott telling everyone to get the hell out of Florida, that federal judge described Rick Scott's reason as, quote, poppycock. Yes, he actually said that in his order. We'll get to that in a bit. Millions, of course, were evacuated thanks to Governor Rick Scott. Well, not thanks to Governor Rick Scott, but thanks to the hurricane and Rick Scott's appropriate order to take shelter, to flee, particularly from coastal areas. But that hurricane went all the way up the East Coast. It displaced a lot of people. They are still facing flooding across the state. And so we'll speak momentarily with one of the folks who knows more about voter registration and absentee balloting and pretty much everything else related to it in that very key swing state of Florida momentarily. Also coming up a little bit later, Desi Doyen is back with another Green News Report. How are you doing today, Desi?
I'm doing all right. Recovering from the second presidential debate.
Yes, I think we all are. I think the nation is. You join a lonely and desperate nation at this point. That guy who asked the question in the debate, since you bring that up, in St. Louis, Missouri, my old hometown, the guy who brought up that question
one
energy question, not climate change, mind you, but energy. He asked specifically about how to stop putting fossil fuel companies out of business. It was kind of a right-wingy question there. It turns out there's a reason for that. That guy works at a coal plant?
Yes, he is a coal-fired power plant operator. So his specific question was really more about fossil fuel jobs. Mm-hmm. But he also did mention in this interview with the New York Times where he said, you know, that we're also realizing that this has to be environmentally responsible. So, you know, it was definitely a question I'm asking about how to save his own job. But he did also bring in the environmental aspect.
It should be added, by the way, that St. Louis is home to Peabody Coal, or now I think Peabody Energy is what they call themselves.
Yeah, they call themselves an energy company.
One of the nation's largest, if not the largest, a huge coal company.
Yes.
Right in the middle of St. Louis. So not surprising that guy would have that question. In any event, it became cause for someone actually saying the words climate change during a presidential debate. So there's that. We'll let you guys figure out which candidate actually said those words. Actually, we'll talk about it in our Green News Report upcoming here on the Bradcast today. All right. Well, following the bombshell hot mic 2005 videotape of Donald Trump lewdly boasting about sexually assaulting women, Hillary Clinton's lead in the polls nationally has once again begun to widen in a pretty substantial way now. A big league perhaps, as Trump might say. But to the Republican Party, everything's still going just fine. At least that's the public face they're trying to put out there. At least that's the public face that Republican National Committee Chair Reince Priebus is trying to put out there. He reiterated his support on Monday for the embattled Republican nominee Donald Trump, telling members of the RNC on a conference call late yesterday that the GOP stands fully behind Trump's campaign. Everything is on course. Everything is going well. The relationship between the RNC and the Trump campaign it's never been better.
First of all, I want to make it very clear that the RNC is in full coordination with the Trump campaign, and we have a great relationship with them. Nothing has changed in our support for our nominee. Okay. If there's any one thing that is our job to do, is to support the nominee that was clearly elected. We're not walking away from anything. The Trump campaign and the RNC is working together. Everything is on course, and I want you to understand that we just, in fact, green-lighted a number of things this afternoon in coordination with the Trump campaign. We are in full coordination with the Trump campaign. We've got a great relationship with them, and we're going to continue to work together, make sure that he wins in November.
Okay, they're going to, of course, what else do you expect him to say other than I resign or I'm leaving or we're throwing
this
guy off the ticket? Yes. So that was Republican Party Chair Reince Priebus Monday night. After that tape came out, what was it, late Friday? Of course, the polls, if you look at the tracking polls, they really started to change in a very, very big way against Donald Trump. He was able to shore that up a little bit, it seems, during the debate on Sunday night that we talked about on yesterday's program. That debate right afterwards, you remember those snap polls, while the media was out there saying that Donald Trump did pretty well. He survived. He did okay. He may have stopped the bleeding. That's what the mainstream corporate punditry was saying, but their actual polls were saying something different. Their actual polls were saying Clinton won and won fairly substantially, according to the CNN ORC poll that night, the snap poll of people who actually watched the debate. Clinton won 57% to Donald Trump's 34%. So now 63% of debate watchers said Trump did better than they expected. But he still lost to Clinton 57-34%, according to CNN's snap poll on Sunday night. YouGov put out a similar poll, finding it a little bit closer. Hillary Clinton was up by 5 points on the who won question. In that case, Clinton won 47-42 against Donald Trump. But if you look at some of the details of the demographics, Univision viewers, Hispanic viewers, they scored the second debate 92-8 for Hillary Clinton. 92-8 for Hillary Clinton.
I'm not really that good at math, but I think that might be considered decisive.
That might be, at least amongst the Hispanic community. But then we got some actual polls right after the videotape had come out. The first poll taken since that 2005 tape had been released, in which Trump was bragging about grabbing women's genitals, that showed the Republican nominee taking a really big hit among voters nationally. Hillary Clinton led in that poll that came out on Monday by 14 points over Donald Trump, 52-38, in a head-to-head matchup among likely voters. That, according to the NBC News Wall Street Journal poll that was released on Monday. That poll, however, was conducted on Saturday and Sunday after the tape came out, but before the Sunday night debate. A 14-point lead for Hillary Clinton. Now, when you added third-party candidates into the question, she still had a pretty huge lead, 11 points, with Libertarian candidate Gary Johnson taking 9 points, Green Party candidate Jill Stein at 2 points, but Clinton is leading 46-35 among voters who, after the tape came out, but before the debate. Now, that debate looks like, in fact, may have helped Donald Trump shore things up a little bit. Hillary Clinton now holds just a 9-point lead. It's still pretty huge, but it is off a fairly good amount since the debate. This is a 9-point lead over Donald Trump after Sunday's presidential debate, according to the same poll, the NBC News Wall Street Journal poll. So we're trying to compare apples to apples here. These numbers indicate that Clinton is still doing very well against Trump nationally, but his debate performance earned him at least a slight recovery for now in this one poll. In a four-way matchup in this case, however, Clinton still has the support of 46% of likely voters. Trump has just 37. That is 9 points overall, with Gary Johnson at 8% and Jill Stein at 2%. So she's still doing well, but he does seem to have done a decent job of stopping the bleeding, at least for now. He's still getting huge crowds at his rallies. He still has a lot of supporters out there and, frankly, a lot of support, a lot of strong support from a lot of Republicans around the country. More importantly, as usual, we don't have a national election in this country. We have 50 state-by-state elections. And once again, the state of Florida is likely to play a very key role in this year's election, where you've got a lot of Hispanic voters, but you've also got a lot of Republican voters, and you've got a Republican governor who seems to be willing to once again do anything he can to support his candidate, who happens to be Donald Trump. We're going to talk about that and the hurricane and the effect that Hurricane Matthew had on this, or may have on this election, right after this. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial. Hey, it's Brad, and you're listening to the Bradcast on Radio Sputnik. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com with you here. Former Vice President Al Gore returned to the great state of Florida on Tuesday to join Hillary Clinton in a rally in Miami. Here's a little bit of what happened.
Your vote really, really, really counts a lot. You can consider me as an Exhibit A of that group. Now, for those of you who are younger than 25, you might not remember the election of 2000 and what happened here in Florida and across the country. For those of you older than 25, I heard you murmuring just now. But take it from me, it was a very close election. Elections, well, here's my point. I don't want you to be in a position years from now where you welcome Hillary Clinton and say, actually, you did win. It just wasn't close enough to make sure that all the votes were counted or whatever.
That's Al Gore in Miami, Florida. On Tuesday, the crowd chants, "You won, you won, you won," talking about the 2000 election. But never mind the vote counting for the moment. First, folks have to be registered to vote before we can even worry about whether their vote will count. Voter registration deadlines are this week in more than a dozen states, including Washington, Arizona, Arkansas, Hawaii, Michigan, New Mexico, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Texas, Georgia, Illinois, Kentucky, Louisiana, Montana, Tennessee. Illinois, did I say that one? Yes. Missouri, New York, North Carolina, Idaho, Oklahoma, Delaware, and yes, the state of Florida. And once again, the road to the White House marches straight through it this year, at least for Donald Trump, as experts consider it nearly impossible for him to win the White House without at least winning the state of Florida, while Hillary Clinton appears to have several different routes, even if she does not take Florida, which polls currently show her narrowly leading at the moment. Still, Barack Obama narrowly won the Sunshine State back in 2012 by just about 73,000 votes. And once again, Florida could be very close. And therefore, it's no surprise, perhaps, that Republican Governor Rick Scott, a supporter of Donald Trump's, after being asked last week to extend the voter registration deadline in the wake of evacuations across the state as Hurricane Matthew blew up the East Coast, declined to allow that extension of the voter registration deadline, which had been set for Tuesday, October 11. That, even though a number of organizations across the state were forced to cancel their final weekend voter registration events last weekend, which is traditionally one of the biggest for new registrations, while everyone was scrambling for cover and safety. Scott said, "I'm not going to extend it." This was on Thursday of last week as he was warning everyone to leave the state. He said, "Everybody's had a lot of time to register. On top of that, we have a lot of opportunities to vote, early voting and absentee voting, so I don't intend to make any changes." That was last Thursday. The Florida Democratic Party has sued Republican Governor Rick Scott and his Secretary of State Ken Detzner in federal court in hopes of extending the registration deadline, noting in their complaint that just last week, on the same day he was making those remarks that he was not going to extend the registration deadline, the Democrats note that Scott unambiguously ordered Florida citizens to, quote, "evacuate, evacuate, evacuate" from the areas in Hurricane Matthew's path, which was much of the state. Scott said, "There are no excuses. You need to leave. This storm will kill you. Time is running out." And that was, of course, the same day that Scott was refusing to extend the voter registration deadline for the very citizens heeding his orders to evacuate, forcing many voters to choose between their safety and the safety of their families on one hand and their fundamental right to vote on the other, according to the Democrats' lawsuit. On Monday, a federal judge ordered a one-day extension, for now just one day, from Tuesday to Wednesday at 5 p.m. local time to allow some voters to register and for voter registration workers to turn in already completed registration forms, and to schedule a hearing for Wednesday to discuss whether the deadline should be further extended to accommodate voters displaced by the storm. In his order on Monday, U.S. District Court Judge Mark E. Walker, an appointee of Barack Obama, though he was confirmed 94-0 by the U.S. Senate, wrote in his order extending the registration deadline by one day for now, quote, "These voters have already had their lives and quite possibly their homes turned upside down by Hurricane Matthew. They deserve a break, especially one that is mandated by the U.S. Constitution. Ensuring they can exercise their constitutional right to vote thus promotes the public interest. If aspiring eligible Florida voters are barred from registering to vote, then those voters are stripped of one of their most precious freedoms," Judge Walker wrote in his order. He said, "This isn't golf. There are no mulligans." He added, "It has been suggested that the issue of extending the voter registration deadline is about politics. Poppycock," the judge wrote. "This case is about the right of aspiring eligible voters to register and to have their votes counted. Nothing could be more fundamental to our democracy." So will this one-day extension of the Florida voter registration deadline actually make any difference for Florida voters? And what are the possibilities of a further extension of that deadline, as many Florida voters are still now just returning to flooded-out homes and struggling with stuff that is of more immediate importance, I suspect, than making sure they are registered to vote necessarily today? Also, what can we glean from the number of absentee ballot requests that have already been made in the state of Florida? And, well, because it's Florida, what other surprises might the great Sunshine State hold in store for all of us, the entire nation, once again in the 2016 election? Here to help us figure out all of this is one of Florida's, if not the nation's, leading experts in all of this, Dr. Daniel A. Smith, Ph.D., University of Florida Research Foundation professor and president and founder of ElectionSmith, Inc., specializing in empirical research on voting and electoral processes in the American states. Dr. Daniel Smith, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Well, it's great to be back, Brad.
Great to have you back. First, I trust that you and yours survived Hurricane Matthew in good order there?
Yes. My neighbors across the street are having a new roof put on, but it was minimal damage from the storm. We kind of got spared here inland.
Oh, good to hear it. Very good to hear it. All right. Is there any way to specifically quantify, Dan, just how many voter registrations, and both Democratic and Republican and non-party affiliated voters, how many might have been lost voter registrations over the days that Floridians were evacuating and voter registration drives were canceled as voters and, I guess, potential voters ran for cover?
Yeah, that's a great question, and it's one that is obviously of concern. People, even inland, were very concerned about what kind of destruction Hurricane Matthew might wrought on us. Mm-hmm. And we weren't thinking about voter registration in Alachua County, much less over on the coast.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I did when I heard Governor Scott kind of refusal at his press conference to consider trying to extend the voter registration or have his Secretary of State, Ken Detzner, mm-hmm. Do so, I looked back at some of the old voter files that I have going back to 2012 and looked at the last 5 or 6 days of voter registration prior to that cutoff, which was October 9th back in 2012, and the numbers actually jumped out at me. On the last day of voter registration, October 9th back in 2012, there were at least 64,000 people who were registered to vote. And if you look at the last 6 days from October...
On the last day? 64,000?
On the last day.
Wow.
That's right, 64,000.
Okay.
And if you look back to 6 days prior, which was roughly the same period in terms of preparation and mm-hmm. the actual evacuation orders and now the cleanup in many of these counties, there were over 116,000 individuals mm-hmm. who registered to vote. And these are successful registrations. These are not ones that were partial, that were thrown out mm-hmm. because they didn't have a Social Security number or driver's license ID or incomplete address. These were people who actually were on the books, and I actually looked to see, well, did these people, were they engaged, or were they, as Governor Scott said, the people who are already interested in the election had already registered to vote. Well, of those 116,000, almost 3 out of 4 turned out to vote in the 2012 general election. Mm. So these were not disinterested people. Mm-hmm. They may have been procrastinating, but they were engaged and were carrying out their civic duties of registering 29 days out, as we have here in Florida, and mm-hmm. turning out to vote on that November 6, 2012 general election.
Does your data give us any indication, and by the way, when I just need to say this again, when it comes to the right to vote, I don't care whether you're Republican, Democrat, non-party affiliated, I want everybody who wants to be able to vote to be able to vote, but can we glean anything from those numbers, those big numbers from 2012, as far as how it affects Democrats versus Republicans in the final days of voter registration?
Yes, absolutely. Of those about 116,000 who registered in the last 6 days, about 39% were Democrats, about 35.5% were no party affiliates, not choosing any political party,
mm-hmm.
About 21.5% were Republicans, and the remainder, a little less than 4%, were third party adherents.
Mm.
So it definitely does disproportionately advantage Democrats if you think about those last minute registrants, but mm-hmm. that makes sense in terms of the Obama campaign having a big voter registration drive. Mm-hmm. Those numbers are even greater if you go back and look at 2008, where I believe there were over 100,000 individuals who were successfully registered on the last day of voter registration mm-hmm. way back on October 6, 2008. And again, disproportionately Democratic when you look at the overall voter file in Florida. You can also get a sense in terms of, race and ethnicity. We had, back in 2012, about 13.5% of all those voters who were registered at the time of the election were either Hispanic or African-American, mm-hmm. Or black, as we call them in the voter file.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of their voter registrations on the last 6 days, both of them were well over 20%. However you slice it, the voters who were registering at the last minute tended to be more Democratic or no party affiliate, tended to be more likely to be African-American and Hispanic. And lastly, they were more likely to be younger.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at those who registered who were the age between 18 and 29, over 44% of those 116,000-some-odd registrants were between 18 and 29. And again, it makes sense. It doesn't mean they're not engaged.
Mm-hmm.
It means that they have to go through that first hoop, registering to vote in order to participate, and many of them don't realize that it's 29 days out.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing, Brad, that I want to emphasize, and I don't have a way to get at this,
right,
but we have a lot of people who move from states that have same-day or election-day registration.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of those are in the Northeast and the Midwest. They come down to Florida. They were able to register to vote and vote either early
mm-hmm.
or on election day. And in Florida, they come down and they're finally reminded by a neighbor or an organization or a church, hey, if you're not registered 29 days or out, you can't vote in this election. It's not like some of these other states, like Ohio, where they had that golden week
right.
back in 2012. It's been now.
Had, yeah.
Had,
the emphasis
exactly,
on had. Yeah.
But you could still, you know, do that in North Carolina. They had it, and they didn't have it. Now they have it again
right.
in terms of being able to register to vote during the early voting period. That's not the case in Florida. If you're not registered, you don't get a vote. And so a lot of people don't realize this. It doesn't dawn upon them until that last minute. And especially, you know, these people who may not have had the opportunity to be pre-registered in high school.
And I suspect that one of the reasons they might find out that, oh, God, I got to register, the deadline is here, is because you hear it a lot on the news and so forth, on television, in the final days before the election, before the deadline strikes. But in this case, I'm not in Florida, but I suspect even if you weren't in, you know, the areas that were most threatened by Hurricane Matthew, that the media down there for the last week or so was all about the hurricane. They weren't saying, oh, by the way, you need to find an opportunity to get out and register. So the word about, you know, the news that the deadline was approaching, I suspect, probably didn't make as much news as it normally would. Is that
absolutely the case? Absolutely the case. I mean, we all had our radios tuned in.
Yeah.
It was 24/7 hearing either Governor Scott or the local weather men and women talking about the projected paths and the evacuation and where you can get your supplies and whether or not the local supermarket was out of water.
Right.
No one was talking about, oh, and while you're at it,
yes.
stop by their supervisors of elections office if it's not closed.
Right.
And register to vote.
And what are Democrats now hoping? Because it is, I guess, the Democrats who are filing, the Republicans, I guess, you would think they're going to lose a lot of their voters as well who weren't able to register. But what are they, what are the Democrats now hoping to have Judge Walker do in this hearing? He's extended it for the deadline for one day through Wednesday, but that hearing is on Wednesday. What are the Democrats hoping he might do at this point? Add another weekend to the deadline? Does that seem possible at this point?
You know, I don't know the details. I believe they're having a hearing
mm-hmm.
right now, but you're absolutely right. This is not just Democrats. As I said, over 20%, 21% of those 116,000 over the last 6 days in 2012 were Republicans. That's over 25,000 Republicans
mm-hmm.
who registered in the last 6 days. These are people that Governor Scott has said weren't engaged. They already had all this time to register, and yet here are fellow Republicans who are waiting to the last minute, procrastinating to register to vote. I think there are a couple remedies that I would imagine are out there in terms of extending the deadline. And it's not just the parties, let's remember, that are interested in this. We have dozens upon dozens of what the state calls third-party voter registration organizations, groups that are out there on the grounds registering individuals who are eligible citizens, who are, for one reason or another, not registered to vote, and getting those forms in. Many of them were in evacuation zones themselves, these gatherers of petitions. They have to get these petitions in. They have other things that are much more of concern, their families' safety, their property, their businesses. And so it's not just the parties and their self-interest. It's also these third-party organizations that are out there, the League of Women Voters, the Rock the Vote, here on campus at the University of Florida, Chomp the Vote. They're out there registering individuals. They need that extra time because they had to go and make sure that their property and their families were doing okay.
Are there additional concerns, Daniel Smith, about voters who may have had, you know, papers, for example, voter ID and such, or even absentee ballots, may have already been sent out that were washed away in the flooding? Are Democrats asking, to your knowledge, or for any accommodations to be made in that regard? Is there any concern, you know, as far as simply being able to cast a vote, having your papers in order, or is there considered enough time in the next 28 days or so to replace those papers at this point?
That is a terrific question, and one that I haven't heard anything about. We have had tens of thousands, millions actually, of absentee ballots mailed out.
Yeah.
Many of those are going to these coastal areas that were on mandatory or voluntary evacuation. Many of them are still flooded, areas like in St. Augustine, over on the coast south mm-hmm. of Jacksonville. These communities, some 25 counties that were in this area that Governor Scott was saying evacuate.
Leave.
Leave. You have ballots that have both been put in the mail to those who have requested them mm-hmm. or who are going out automatically, as well as thousands upon thousands of ballots that were put in mailboxes that may or may not still exist.
Yeah.
You know, it's a really great question in terms of what are we going to do with those ballots. And surely there's going to be individuals who said that they filled out an absentee ballot and they put it in the mailbox and there's no record of it. You would think that there might be some way to allow for a cure period for those individuals.
You know, and I am no fan of New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, nor am I a fan of some of the specific remedies that he put in place for voters after Hurricane Sandy struck back in 2012, just days before the election. But at least he seemed to be concerned about how to accommodate voters who were dealing with this storm in its aftermath. It has been kind of shocking that Governor Rick Scott down there in Florida seems to be doing just the opposite. He does not seem to have any concern about it. Maybe some of these numbers, Dan, I read this. This is from your blog, an exclusive on Monday at the Election Smith blog that I'm sure is a typo. So let me let you clarify this. You write that between September 10 and October 10, 2016, the Republican Party of Florida submitted 117 new voter registration forms. The Florida Democratic Party submitted 6,920. So that must be a typo, right? 117 new registration forms over the past month from the Florida Republican Party?
Yeah, I think the Democratic one was a little less than that for the month, as opposed to since they started doing voter registration drives. But yes, I believe the Democrats was in the 4,000 or 5,000 range, if I recall correctly. Those are official records that the parties and all those third-party voter registration organizations are submitting to the state mm-hmm. In terms of their active roles in registering people to vote. It was implemented, this law that requires groups to register and then report their activities, by the Republican legislature because they were concerned about voter registration fraud stemming from the allegations with Acorn way back in the mid-2000s here in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
But that number certainly jumped out as being ridiculously low.
117.
Yeah, exactly. We've had about 651,000 new registrations here in Florida from January 1st through September 1st. Many of those individuals are registering through their DMV offices or as pre-registration in high schools or directly at the supervisor's office when they come in or the VA hospital or whatnot. Democrats have far exceeded Republicans in terms of voter registration here in Florida over that period of time from January through September 1st. About 221,000 Democrats newly registered. These are not people who are changing the registrations.
Mm-hmm.
And about 185,000 Republicans have registered to vote. So, obviously, Republicans are registering not just through the Republican Party of Florida's efforts. There are local party operations on the grounds that are collecting. But the vaunted ground game is certainly severely lacking with respect to Republicans in Florida when it comes to voter registration, and that very well may be a calculation with respect to Governor Scott. But going back to your earlier point, Governor Scott has a history of not being very interested in expanding voting rights. He signed legislation that cut our early voting period mm-hmm. from 14 days down to 8 days. It eliminated the final Sunday of early voting. That was a huge success back in 2008. It led to huge lines, as you recall, back mm-hmm. in 2012, where we actually ironically had Sunday voting in a couple areas because the lines were so long that people in line at 7 p.m. on the final Saturday, I think it was November 3rd, ended up casting their ballots on Sunday, November 4th.
Yes.
So, you know, we actually did have Sunday voting in a couple areas, especially down in Miami-Dade. He said he was going to do the right thing, and to the legislature's credit, in 2013, they remedied that. They gave the supervisors more autonomy to be able to lengthen early voting up mm-hmm. to 14 days and 12 hours a day. They got rid of the onerous restrictions on the third-party voter registration groups that people like Stephen Colbert and John yeah. Stewart just parodied with respect to the 48 hours and jail time that were going to come down on individuals who didn't get their voter registration forms turned in.
They were threatening, just to be clear, you know, they were threatening, what would happen to third-party groups like the Florida League of Women Voters, who had been registering voters there for 70 years or something like that in the state of Florida. They were threatened with jail time. If they didn't follow these very specific rules that Governor Scott had put in place. So they ended up canceling, I think, in 2012, correct? They just
That's
basically canceled
right.
their voter registration drive across the entire state?
My colleague Michael Herron, who's at Dartmouth, and I have mm-hmm. a paper that we looked at. What were the effects of that dampening on mm-hmm. voter registration drives of these third-party organizations like the League of Women Voters? And you're absolutely right. In the summer of 2011, when that law went into effect, I believe it was in late June, these groups just withdrew their voter registration drives. And as a result, there was a marked decrease relative to the same periods that we looked at in 2007. And it was almost 11 months for those groups to be on the sidelines. So these groups are essential to finding those individuals who are citizens, they're eligible to vote, and for one reason or another, they've just moved to the state, they've just gotten their citizenship, they've just turned 18, they just became politically engaged. And getting them to be registered to vote, we have an artificial deadline. This 29 days out, many other states allow you to register all the way up to Election Day, and I think the judge made a good point, and that it's completely arbitrary. Federal law says you can't be outside of, I think it's 31 days. But other states, North Dakota doesn't have any voter registration.
Right.
Right. We know that it's a barrier to participation.
I love what Rick Scott said. He said, well, everybody's had a lot of time to register. He doesn't get to decide that. It's been good enough, close enough. I mean, that's what he said when they were asking, you know, can people vote or will you extend the deadline? We've had enough time. And then he, you know, added that they've had, and plus you got a lot of opportunities to vote, early voting, absentee voting, so I don't intend to make changes. But the fact that there may be opportunities to vote don't do anybody much good if they're not registered to vote, because as you note, there is no same-day election day registration in the state of Florida. But you also noted, Daniel Smith, that you wrote at the ElectionSmith blog, many qualified citizens have signed voter registration forms, but they may not have had their applications processed due to the destruction wrought by Hurricane Matthew in several counties. So are you saying that there are folks who did manage to register before the deadline, but who may not have that registration processed because of the storm? Those people who think they're registered may not be able to vote at all this year if the judge doesn't extend the time for simply processing those registrations?
I think it's a strong possibility. Think about the voter who on Wednesday of last week downloaded our form. We don't have electronic voter registration mm-hmm. yet in Florida. It doesn't get implemented until 2017. So you have to go online and download a form. And let's say you're one of these civically minded people who's worried about Hurricane Matthew, you've got all your preparations, you're about to evacuate and think, oh, I was going to register to vote. Let me download the form. You download the form, you print it out, you fill it out, you provide all the information, you put it in an envelope, put a stamp on it, go down and put it in a mailbox down the street. And Hurricane Matthew hits. Postal Service isn't working. Who knows what's happened to that mailbox that you've put it in. That individual, if it is postmarked prior to the mm-hmm. registration date cutoff, October 11th, here in Florida this year,
right.
that will count. But there are many reasons why that piece of mail, which normally would have gotten picked up, might not get postmarked, might not even, by the date, might not even be processed at all because it's lost. We don't know. And these individuals will have no recourse if they finally get back online and see that they're not registered, if that registration application doesn't yeah. get to the supervisor's office.
Gotcha. Let me, I've got just a few more minutes here with Dr. Daniel Smith of the University of Florida and of Election Smith, Inc. Dan, let me move the ball forward just a little bit here to from registrations to absentee ballot requests and what we can glean from that. Democrats are requesting more absentee ballots in Florida than they were at this point in 2012, according to the New York Times. We're seeing increases of 50% increases in heavily Hispanic areas around Miami and Orlando. Democrats are requesting mail-in ballots in larger numbers than in 2012, while Republican participation is declining, New York Times reports. Does your data in Florida indicate an overall increase in Democratic absentee requests and a decline in GOP absentee requests? And if so, does that necessarily indicate the Dems are going to do better in 2012 down there, or simply that more will be voting by absentee ballot this year than they will on Election Day?
Right. I think you've got a couple things that I would throw some caution to the wind on these, mm-hmm. these numbers. First of all, we have a very different system. We actually call it now vote by mail as opposed to absentee ballots. Mm-hmm. So that's a statutory change from 2012 to 2016. The other major change is that in between 2012 and 2016, the legislature has allowed for individuals to effectively become permanent absentee voters, not to the same extent that you have in California, but you can stay on for, I think it's two cycles mm-hmm. In which you can have your absentee ballot then automatically sent to you without having to request it. And many of the counties are actually having a checkbox on the absentee ballot envelope to say, would you like to renew that? And so you are definitely going to have more people voting absentee ballots than in 2012 just because the system has gotten easier. We have now this permanent absentee ballot status. And many of the supervisors of elections, these 67 county officers, are pushing absentee ballots to voters in a more active way. They're mm-hmm. promoting that process. So there's no question that you're going to have more people requesting or having absentee ballots mailed out than in 2012. Democrats, especially since Democrats were always behind the curve on absentee ballots or vote by mail compared to Republicans in the past. So I am pretty skeptical about those numbers at this point. I'm going to be looking, obviously, at the numbers of absentee ballots that are being returned. Mm-hmm. Right now, those are predominantly overseas military and civilian ballots. They're starting to trickle in because absentee ballots went out last week of domestic voters. But I think it's way too early to really say that one party is doing better than the other with respect to requests or absentee ballot returns at this point.
Gotcha. All right. Last question here before I let you go, Dan. In past years, we have seen Florida Governor Scott and his hand-picked Secretary of State down there, Ken Detzner, purging voters from the rolls or trying to. There was actually a bit of a rebellion. I think it was 2012. By the county clerks or the supervisors of election, as they call them down there, who said, no, we're not going to do this. Your purge lists are bad. And I think we all remember, many of us remember, that there were thousands incorrectly purged from the voting rolls back in the year 2000 that Al Gore was talking about there at the top of this segment. Many of those were incorrectly purged because they shared the name of a possible felon. I'm concerned about this happening all over the country once again this year, Dan. Frankly, the people will show up at the polls and they'll find out only then that they have been purged. Do you have concerns about that once again this year in the state of Florida and elsewhere at the country that may happen to unsuspecting voters? We'll only find out on November 8th.
I think it's always a concern. When we talk about voter fraud in this country, it's really not at the retail level of individuals coming into the polls and falsifying their identity and voting twice or three times. That rarely, if ever, happens. It happens very rarely, but it does happen with respect to some absentee ballots where it's someone who's requested an absentee ballot and is filled it in without the type of verification that the in-person has. Where we actually do have some concerns is at the wholesale level, in which it's usually someone in a supervisor's office, a clerk, or someone who's probably, you know, it can be malicious, it can be just accidental, is cleaning the records in a way that is not permissible under federal law. And we certainly had that in 2012 when it was the directives of the Secretary of State's office to the supervisor's elections. First, 180-some thousand individuals who they suspected as being, quote-unquote, non-citizens, and then the ultimately 2,625 individuals who they flagged as being potential non-citizens. Most of those citizens, if not all, were the individuals were actually citizens.
Yep.
And they were restored. It was not only because of the pushback by the supervisor elections, it was also litigation and a coalition of voting rights groups. But this is something that is always a concern in terms of list maintenance, and we should not be having any list maintenance of wholesale sort in any state within, I think it's 90 days of a federal election. We should be closing those books and making sure those individuals who were registered 2 months ago, 3 months ago, are still on the books and have an opportunity to cast a ballot. There is the fail-safe of being able to vote a provisional ballot, but provisional ballots are sometimes there's a lot of paperwork. They're not always approved. So it's really important for individual voters to make sure that they are on the voter rolls. And most states have portals where, or counties have portals where a voter can type in their name and their address and make sure that their voter registration forms are up to date, their signatures are up to date, and that they're going to be ready to go either in the early voting, absentee, or on election day.
A very good reminder, one we try to give here as often as possible, and with everybody following this race, this insane election this year, this closely, you know, I'm concerned that people aren't checking their own voter registration quite as closely, so let that be a reminder to you. Dr. Daniel A. Smith of the University of Florida Research Foundation and president and founder of Election Smith, Inc. You can follow his work. You can and should follow his work, certainly on the Twitters at Election Smith and on the internets at electionsmith.wordpress.com. Hey, thanks, Dan. It's always great and informative to talk to you. I hope you don't mind if we bother you a few more times before and or after the election, depending on how things go in the next few weeks.
Always a pleasure, Brad. Of course, I would love not to hear from you.
Yes.
Because that would mean everything went smoothly down in Florida, but I suspect we'll be hearing from you again.
There you go. I hope to not talk to you soon. Thanks, Dan.
All right. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye. All right, a quick break, and we're back with more Bradcast right after this. I'm Brad Friedman. Stay tuned. Hey, this is Brad, and you're listening to the Bradcast on Radio Sputnik. Melting for you, Desi Doyen, no matter what. all right, well, I guess we better get to it. We're running late, as usual. Me running late? Nah. Here we go, our latest Green News Report.
I have a comprehensive energy policy, but it really does include fighting climate change.
Climate change shows up at a presidential debate.
Energy is under siege by the Obama administration, under absolute siege.
But not for long. Plus,
North Carolina is in a state of emergency. 1,400 rescues in 24 hours. Some levees can't hold back all the water, and rivers are rising.
Global warming-fueled Hurricane Matthew leaves death and destruction in its wake.
All of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
We are, however, producing a lot of natural gas.
Hey, keep it to yourself, lady. This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, major hurricane sweeps through the Caribbean, kills hundreds down there, moves up through four or five states in the U.S., kills more than 20 at this point, and yet, just a day or two later, we have a presidential debate, and once again, there are no questions about climate change.
That's right. Hurricane Matthew and climate change were pretty much lost in this very bizarre election season. But just to update, Hurricane Matthew has killed at least 26 people as of airtime in the United States. More than 1,400 people in North Carolina alone had to be rescued after Matthew dumped 15 inches of rain in 24 hours in some areas, caused record flooding and record storm surge from North Florida to North Carolina. It was much worse in Haiti, over 1,000 deaths so far, and possibly a new epidemic of cholera. Now, the exact influence of climate change on Hurricane Matthew's intensity will take time to determine, but climate scientists and meteorologists are already saying that Matthew was turbocharged by record atmospheric moisture 10 to 15% above normal and record warm ocean temperatures, plus storm surge that was boosted by rising sea levels, all fingerprints of climate change.
Other than that, nothing to talk about at a presidential debate.
Yeah. Not a single question was asked by either of the debate moderators or the audience members at the second presidential debate in St. Louis. However, an audience member did ask about energy policy. Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump repeated his false claim that the Environmental Protection Agency, rather than the competition from natural gas, is behind the global decline of the coal industry.
Now, I'm all for alternative forms of energy, including wind, including solar, etc. But we need much more than wind and solar. There is a thing called clean coal. The EPA is so restrictive that they are putting our energy companies out of business.
Not all energy companies. Solar and wind companies are booming in the United States.
And in a good way, not in the way that oil companies tend to be booming and killing people when they do.
A little fact check here. Clean coal is an oxymoron that refers to one pilot plant in the United States that captures carbon emissions from coal, but is unfinished, behind schedule, and astronomically over budget. The U.S. natural gas boom killed coal in the United States. Trump is a climate science denier, and his call for more fossil fuel extraction would be disastrous for the climate and ignores the popularity of solar and wind with the vast majority of Americans.
Facts. Check.
For her part, Democratic presidential candidate, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, was forced once again to be the only one to bring up climate change on her own. She praised the U.S. oil and gas boom, however, and doubled down on the Obama administration's policy of calling natural gas a bridge fuel.
We are, however, producing a lot of natural gas, which serves as a bridge to more renewable fuels. So I have a comprehensive energy policy, but it really does include fighting climate change because I think that is a serious problem. And I support moving toward more clean, renewable energy as quickly as we can, because I think we can be the 21st century clean energy superpower.
Now, a bit of a fact check here. While it is true that the glut of cheap natural gas has succeeded in reducing U.S. emissions by displacing coal, the fracking boom has had steep environmental costs for water supplies and local communities. Spending on natural gas infrastructure displaces spending on renewable energy infrastructure, and scientists warn that needs to be ramped up rapidly to make up for lost time if we're to avoid the worst climate impacts.
And it should be noted, because we will hear it from opponents of Hillary Clinton, she was a big proponent of fracking during her time as Secretary of State.
Yes, she did promote the Obama administration's official position abroad of promoting U.S. natural gas fracking technology. Clinton also made sure that viewers heard that she, unlike Trump or the Republican Party, has a detailed plan to help coal country transition away from the coal industry and its decades of environmental destruction, probably the first time most Americans heard of it. Polls show that even though Americans are still deeply divided on climate science along partisan lines, the majority do accept that climate change is happening and want government action. And, of course, everybody loves renewable energy.
Well, maybe Fox News' Chris Wallace will ask about climate change at the final presidential debate.
Yeah,
I couldn't even get through the sentence without laughing. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Make them laugh, make them laugh. Don't you know everyone wants to laugh?
My dad said be an actor, my son.
Yes.
But
anything. Anything that we can laugh at these days.
Anything at all, especially considering that next presidential debate coming
up. I'll take it. I'll take it. Good Lord. All right. We got to get out. My thanks to you, Desi Doyen. Great job, as ever. Our producer, Desi Doyen. My thanks to Daniel A. Smith of the University of Florida and electionsmith.wordpress.com. I'll be leaning on him again this year, although I hope not. Maybe everything will go just fine. What could possibly go wrong? My thanks also to you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. It is greatly appreciated, particularly those of you who have stopped by bradblog.com/donate to help us continue to do what we do 5 days a week here on the Bradcast. If you missed any portion of today's show, download it forever as free for free at bradblog.com. You can drop me email as well. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com, and you can find me on the Facebooks and the Twitters at TheBradBlog. That is it. Until we meet again, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.